Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about snow, gun violence legislation, and a tour of the Hahn Ranch. It's Wednesday, September 18th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Enjoy films, Billings is the place to be this week, when 5 days of some of the best independent films from around the country will play on movie screens downtown. Kay Erickson reports.
Thursday kicks off the second annual Montana International Film Festival, or MINT, organized by filmmakers for filmmakers. Ruhit Holton with MINT says thanks to the strong support last year, this year's MINT will be bigger and better.
It's been clear that Billings and Eastern Montana is not just ready, but hungry for this kind of content and cultural experience. So it's an exciting time to be a part of this.
Tolton says this year's festival kicks off Thursday with an opening night reception and film, Epic Yellowstone, narrated by actor and part-time Montana resident Bill Pullman.
It really focuses on this lovely undammed river that we have here in our backyard.
The environment and the outdoors will be a highlight on Saturday when MINT joins forces with the Northern Plains Resource Council to host their Wild and Scenic Film Festival at the Babcock Theater. The past decade, the Wild and Scenic has been a standalone event for Northern Plains, but this year they're part of MINT. MC Ed Gulick.
Like a lot of film festivals, we have some great outdoor adventure, and we also have beautiful landscapes. People have a sense of wonder about that, so it's fun and inspiring, but we also have a lot of films that are about our relationship to our land.
MINT will also feature several panels throughout the festival, including a double documentary feature Friday night on the issues of human trafficking. Other panels include an Indigenous film panel on Saturday and Women in Film also on Friday. The Montana International Film Festival begins Thursday. For more information on MINT, go to our website, ypradio.org. I'm Kay Erickson with Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Snow samples from 3 national parks in the Rocky Mountains reflect improved air quality in the region since the mid-1990s. That's according to a recent publication from the National Park Service. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
The Rocky Mountain Regional Snowpack Chemistry Monitoring Study has been analyzing the chemical makeup of snowpack at 57 sites. Graham Sexstone with the U.S. Geological Survey says the program was created when acid rain was the norm in the early 1990s.
The main focus of this project and its development was trying to monitor water quality in snowpacks that is associated with air pollution, particularly in these high elevation sensitive ecosystems.
Atmospheric pollutants can settle on snowpack, or individual snowflakes can deliver far-flung particles to the sensitive high-elevation sites.
Small increases in a nutrient like nitrogen can really promote invasive species or contribute to algal blooms or things like that. That's the main risk in terms of these high elevation systems.
A recent publication by the National Park Service explained that samples collected in Glacier, Great Sand Dunes, and Rocky Mountain National Parks between 1996 and 2018 showed a decrease in nitrate and sulfate, which is associated with vehicle and industrial emissions and can acidify water. Ammonium levels, which agriculture operations largely contribute to, have stayed flat. Sexstone says the paper mostly reflects findings from the larger monitoring network, except for the Greater Yellowstone area and other locations in Wyoming.
That's where we're seeing some of the strongest increases in ammonia and ammonium in the snow. But in terms of the nitrate and sulfate trends, I'd say it's pretty representative.
Sexstone says the network's data mirrors improved air quality. According to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, most air pollutants have decreased significantly since the 1990s, but some have shown a slight uptick since 2016. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio.
Montana's firefighting fund is in good shape moving into the end of the year, according to the state budget director. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports.
Tom Livers, director of the Governor's Office of Budget and Program Planning, told the Legislative Finance Committee Tuesday, "This year and last year's mild fire seasons have swelled the state's firefighting savings account.
We've got probably 2.5 times a typical fire year is in the reserve currently. Or another way to look at it, we've about got enough to cover a catastrophic year like we saw in 2017.
More than 1 million acres burned in the summer of 2017, costing the state $64 million. That contributed to the calling of a special legislative session that winter to fix the state's broken budget. According to a Legislative Finance Division report at the end of August, less than 150,000 acres have burned in 2018 and 2019 combined. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
Many are calling for a fast resolution to the Trump administration's trade war with China. Among them are Montana cattle producers who see opportunity in Chinese markets. I found out more. China represents a relatively small share of U.S. beef markets. They take in about $37 million in U.S. beef each year, but Jay Bodner with the Montana Stock Growers Association says there is a high potential in the market.
It's been estimated at roughly almost $400 million, you know, just barely getting into the door.
MSGA sent a letter to Chinese officials through Montana Republican Senator Steve Daines last week. They reached out as a potential trading partner and expressed the importance of a fast resolution to trade disputes while touting the value of Montana beef. Current Chinese tariffs on U.S. beef sit at about 37%, but the MSGA sees opportunity in Chinese markets when trade negotiations are finalized.
We've just barely got that market open in 2017, but we know that there is tremendous potential there.
Bodner says MSGA understands it takes time to develop new markets. Democratic U.S. Senator John Tester also called for urgency from the Trump administration in making a deal with China on a rural press call with reporters Tuesday.
Because we got folks that are going broke. It's already happened in my community. And it's going to get a whole lot worse. And if the president doesn't negotiate, it's hard to see how this is going to come to any sort of resolution.
Tester said he will be putting forth a bill that would give Congress the ability to pull back some of the tariffs imposed by the Trump administration. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. Nearly 24 U.S. Senate Democrats planned a marathon floor session yesterday evening to speak out on what they call congressional inaction on gun violence. Montana's Democratic Senator John Tester was not among them. But as Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports, he says it's long past time the Senate take up gun violence legislation.
Senator Tester says he supports expanding background checks on gun sales.
As my son-in-law once said, if you're afraid of a background check, maybe you shouldn't have a gun.
Tester, Montana's senior senator, supports the Manchin-Toomey proposal, which would essentially expand background checks to most people who buy a firearm from someone other than a federally licensed dealer. This summer, the Helena IR reported Tester supports reforms like red flag laws, which permit police or family members to petition courts to order the temporary removal of firearms from someone who may present a threat to themselves or others.
I think the red flag laws are dependent upon the background check database if they're going to be effective. I can't tell you if they're going to pass, but I will tell you the greatest deliberative body in this country, the United States Senate, needs to debate this issue.
During his monthly telephone press conference with Montana reporters Tuesday, Tester placed blame for congressional inaction on gun reform legislation squarely on the shoulders of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Democrats are increasing pressure on McConnell, who's up for re-election in 2020.
Senator McConnell, the senator from Kentucky who happens to be the leader of the Senate, hasn't allowed a lot of bills to come to the floor. We have an opportunity on this particular issue that is a real issue that we can protect law-abiding citizens' Second Amendment rights and do our best to make sure that terrorists, criminals, and court-adjudicated folks that are mentally ill don't have the right, because I think they forfeited their Second Amendment rights.
But Tester draws the line at mandated gun buyback laws, programs critics describe as outright gun confiscation. Many Democratic presidential candidates have offered gun reform proposals, but Beto O'Rourke drew national attention last week with this remark during the ABC News Democratic presidential debate.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
Again, Montana Senator John Tester.
There's a bunch of folks that are running for president that are less than 1%. Beto is one of them. Last time I checked, he's trying to get a little air under his wings, so you got to say stuff that's, I don't know, I won't say obnoxious, but out there.
Tester doesn't think O'Rourke's proposal is realistic and ultimately only helps Republicans who are eager to portray Democrats as gun grabbers.
Look, bottom line is this. You guys have all watched the shootings, whether it's Sandy Hook or whether it's a nightclub in Florida or whether it's what happened in El Paso. You know, it's our job to debate stuff. I'm not somebody who's going to take guns away from law-abiding citizens. That's just not going to happen under my watch. But by the same token, I think there's some common sense things we can do that will ensure our Second Amendment rights are preserved.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell last week said the only thing preventing gun violence legislation from receiving floor votes is whether President Donald Trump will sign it or not. Politico, meanwhile, reports Trump will not consider the House-passed universal background checks bill as part of his proposed gun package. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
A tourism agency in Billings is figuring out a new type of currency, one made of clicks, likes, and shares. Kayla DeRoche reports.
The Travel Bloggers Exchange, or TBEX, is an annual conference for bloggers, videographers, and podcasters. They hold events all over the world to help content creators network, improve their craft, and build their social media savviness. Last week, they spent a few days in Billings. The conference attracted people like Erica Ekstrom, who owns a horse stable in New York State and writes about traveling with horses.
Like, it's like a Western adventure, you know? So, yeah, it was a perfect fit.
The conference also caught the interest of Tiana Grata, who writes a blog called The Passport Chronicles.
I came here to eat, mostly.
Billings organizers are hoping these bloggers and at least some of the 500-plus other attendees will create content about Billings. City and state-funded tourism organization, Visit Billings, dedicated a full team of staff members and a year to organizing the conference. Allie Murnion with Visit Billings says they want to draw people to the city, and they're doing that partly by touting Billings' access to everything around it.
I think when we talk about Billings as a brand and how we've marketed ourselves as a brand, we talk about that we're Montana's trailhead, right? So we're this nice center of the state. We have accessibility through the airport, through the interstate. So we're a really, really great place to start your Montana adventure.
Out-of-state travelers spent about $3 billion in Montana last year, according to a report by the University of Montana's Institute for Tourism and Recreation Research. Yellowstone County raked in about 9% of that, or $270 million. It's not cheap to host the TBEX conference at $12,500, but Murnion with Visit Billings is banking on the content and social media clout that comes with an extended visit by hundreds of content creators. And a whole slew of other travel and adventure organizations like KOA and state travel company Visit Montana also paid for booths at the conference. Murnion says her organization tried to appeal to sponsors by projecting the potential benefit for the state's tourism industry.
We started doing the number crunching on what would it cost for me to get the top six influencers and bloggers of this conference back to Billings. Because many bloggers and influencers do actually charge a creative fee before they'll ever visit a destination.
The internet version of word of mouth is the kind businesses can now pay for. Norma Nickerson, director of the Institute for Tourism and Recreation Research, has been studying tourism for more than 25 years and says that's the current state of advertising.
It used to be you had a print ad in a magazine. I mean, that was it. Sometimes you'd put billboards up. Sometimes you would put an ad on TV. You don't see that as much.
Nowadays, companies and brands send samples to bloggers, YouTubers, and other content creators to review or mention their product. Or influencers go to a business, enjoy the service for free, and post about it. Last year, a hotel owner in Dublin went viral for calling out an influencer who asked for a free stay in exchange for a plug in their YouTube and Instagram accounts. Nickerson says followers can't always tell what content is sponsored and what is authentic.
The trick is, from the consumer point of view, is how accurate is it? But then advertising, they don't worry about that. It's, this is what we offer, and they're going to tell you what they want you to hear.
When it comes to the TBEX conference, it's no sure thing that bloggers will actually create content around the host city. The attendees are paying to be there, somewhere between $300 and $700, depending on the package. But TBEX organizer Rick Calvert believes that also makes the content more valuable.
That message is a real, authentic message of somebody's perspective, and it's not a sales message from the tourist board. So it just carries more weight with somebody who might come visit here someday.
Meridian with Visit Billings admits it may be difficult to show how the conference pays off.
This is the golden question. You know, do social media hits and do social media, you know, engagements actually directly benefit people coming here? We believe strongly it does. But the conversion rate and proving that is a very difficult thing to do.
They're hoping the conference will lead to Billings-themed posts that may increase the traffic to the area. Next year, TBEX will be held in Catania, Sicily. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Ranchers in Montana are finding innovative ways to support their livestock while conserving native fisheries. Rachel Kramer recently toured the Hahn Ranch, a 2018 National Environmental Stewardship Award finalist, recognized for its role restoring Deep Creek.
Somebody falls off the bridge. Who's got the liability on this?
Fish, wildlife, and barks.
On a cool, rainy morning near Townsend, a group of ranchers, conservationists, and wildlife advocates look down at the clear water flowing through Deep Creek. It connects to the Missouri River and serves as an important spawning site for brown and rainbow trout. This scene represents 30 years of collaboration between landowners, agencies, and conservation groups. Ron Spoon is a fisheries biologist with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks.
You might get confused on this tour if it's a Hahn Ranch tour or is it a watershed group tour, because we're seeing a couple of places upstream off of Hahn Ranch, but we wouldn't have had a watershed group if the Hahns hadn't been the leader of saying we see something here that works for both agriculture and fish.
In 1988, the Montana Department of Environmental Quality included Deep Creek on its list of impaired waters. The creek had a lot of erosion problems. It was muddy and warm, and between May and October, the water was diverted into an irrigation ditch. Rancher Chuck Hahn says fish would end up in farmers' fields.
They just scoop them out with pitchforks and take them to the wife, and she would can them for the winter. But they never had the chance to get back to the river or to the lake again.
In the early 90s, the Hahns started working with FWP's Ron Spoon, neighbors, water user associations, and local agencies to restore the creek. They installed a siphon to keep Deep Creek free-flowing and separate from the irrigation ditch. They also fenced off livestock around the creek as part of their efforts to restore the stream beds and vegetation. Several decades later, Deep Creek has higher, cooler water levels in the summer and a lot more fish, about 2,000 to 3,000 brown trout juveniles. DEQ removed Deep Creek from the state's impaired waters list in 2016. On a recent tour of the Hahn Ranch organized by the Montana Stock Growers Association, Lauren Nelson, a reporter from Big Timber, asks Chuck Hahn's son, Dusty,
"Why do cowboys care about fish?"
We like the fish too.
If you're interested in the landscape and the ecosystem and want to keep everybody happy that is involved in the stream or the water course, I think that the fish are really a visible and a good indicator of stream health.
At another stop on the tour, the group walks up to a metal sculpture of two people shaking hands. It's dedicated to the people who work to restore Deep Creek.
We've seen what's been successful here. Why don't we do this everywhere?
That's Andy Brummond. He works for the Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation.
You need the people involved, the people with the water rights, the people on the creek, to be willing to do it.
Brumund processes applications for new water rights and changes to existing ones, which can be really complicated. He's been working with FWP and the landowners so the agency can lease the water rights on the creek to make sure water levels stay high. He says there are plenty of examples around the state where landowners have worked with agencies or coalitions to conserve water or switch water sources to protect a stream. But the story of Deep Creek is unique because there was so much competition for the water and the creek was actually drying up. Here's Chuck Hahn again.
If we didn't have water, we would not be a viable operation. It's our lifeblood, essentially.
This part of Montana usually gets less than 12 inches of rain a year. The ranch would not be able to raise 550 cattle or grow hay, grain, and forage crops without irrigation. Hahn says coming up with a collaborative solution was a win-win. The family is working on other conservation efforts as well. They've adopted no-till farming and use forage crops to improve soil health while allowing longer rest periods on their rangelands. On the tour, Hahn shared how open land provides habitat and migration corridors for wildlife.
It's something that the ranch has been really interested in because we've always liked the wildlife, and makes me feel really good that we've been able to accomplish something like this and benefit agriculture and recreation.
With job opportunities in nearby Helena and the recreational draw of Canyon Ferry Lake, more subdivisions have been popping up near the Hahn Ranch. Hahn says if more people understand how ranchers are stewards of the land, maybe this century-old operation can keep going another 100 years. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.